wait out the storm. Dr. Parker writes, "This is what it is like to be white in America. It is to travel well ensconced in a secure vehicle, to see signs of what is happening in the world outside the compartment one is traveling in, and to not realize that those signs have any contemporary meaning. It is to be dislocated, to misjudge your location, and to believe you are uninvolved and unaffected by what is happening in the world. To come of age in America as a white person is to be educated into ignorance. It is to be culturally shaped to not know and not want to know the actual context in which you live." End quote. So as you can tell, we're going to talk this morning about being white and being privileged. Perhaps like walking through a minefield or being thrown into a briar patch, we're going to carefully pick our way through a talk about being white and privileged. We're going to take courage from knowing we are a community grounded in love and support for one another. And we're going to take a deep breath. And we are going to talk about being white and privileged. Though there may be moments of discomfort or even confusion, I have faith that we will make it safely to the other side together. This topic is important to me because I have felt so powerless about what to do about racial injustice in our country and the world. I see that things aren't fair. I see that despite housing laws to ensure that discrimination doesn't occur, that people of color still tend to be lumped into neighborhoods together, as are white people. Legal segregation has ended, but our world is still largely segregated. I see that despite anti-discrimination laws meant to ensure equal opportunity to employment, that people of color still make less money on the dollar than white people do. I see families of color in Arizona being ripped apart as parents are taken from children for the crime of working in this country without proper documentation. I see the effects of racism all around me, but I don't know what to do to fight racism. For me, learning about my white privilege and the history of white privilege in the United States has meant finally acknowledging the elephant in the room of our culture. It has meant learning that the world is not actually fair. I was raised as a white person to believe that the world is fair. And so learning it is not has meant grieving the loss of the world as I understood it. But this work has also been tremendously healing for me. It takes a lot of energy to ignore the elephant in the room. Learning about white privilege is part of my free and responsible search for truth and meaning, that Unitarian Universalist principle of ours, truth and meaning. It has been the way for me to stay in the struggle to achieve the world I dream of, rather than giving up hope, and rather than ignoring the realities around me. I do want to talk about the privilege exercise we just did together, but I also need to stop and note that we are not all of us in this room white people. The complexities of racial identity are not always visible, and I know there are people here who do not identify as white, or who don't identify as white European American, which is how we mean the word white in American culture. I hope for you folks there will still be parts of this sermon that are interesting and meaningful, but I will acknowledge that I have written it with white people in mind. And I apologize. I think too much of our culture is designed with only white people in mind, but I hope I will be forgiven in service of a larger cause. And because we're talking about privilege, we should start with a working definition. Privilege is when some of us enjoy a benefit beyond the advantages of others. When we talk about white privilege, we are talking about a system of benefits enjoyed by white people solely because we are white, not because we have earned them. Because we are white, we enjoy the privilege in our culture of not being stopped by the police indiscriminately. Because we are white, we enjoy the privilege in our culture of learning white history, European history, in our schools, of seeing white faces in movies and on television and in all levels of our government. It is frequently hard for white people to even recognize the privileges we have, which is why we did the privilege exercise together. Because our experience is largely that people trust us and feel safe around us, and we have access to education, jobs, financial support. It can be hard to see and understand what the experience of people of color in our culture is frequently like. For those of us with a lot of candy in our cups, it can be easy not to even see that other people don't have much candy. And when our cups are filled with more candy than we even need, it is really hard to understand what it feels like not to have enough. Now, I hope the exercise was useful in several ways, and I hope it might be something you continue to reflect on after today, perhaps in discussions with friends and family. And I hope you'll come to talk about the sermon here in the sanctuary at noon so we can discuss it more then together. But it was important for me to do the exercise together because I wanted to bring home that we all have privilege of some kind. And at the same time, most of us have oppression or marginalization of some kind also. The exercise we did today focused on race and class, but we could have whole other talks about gender, sexual orientation, and physical ability. And we could do privilege exercises looking at those issues. So let me say that again. We all have privilege of some kind, and we, most of us, have oppression or marginalization of some kind as well. It is not all or nothing. And the point of learning and talking about privilege is not for anyone to feel guilty or to feel bad. The point is to learn the truth, to learn about the world around us, and to learn about ourselves. When we are unaware of the system of privileges conferred upon us, then we are simply unaware of the realities of the world around us. Men need to learn about their male privilege. Straight people need to learn about our heterosexual privilege. Able-bodied people need to learn about our able-bodied privilege. And white people need to learn about our white privilege. As Dr. Parker tells us, it is part of white privilege not to have to look around us and see this reality. Now, it's tremendously difficult in our culture to separate race privilege from class privilege, which is why I'm talking about both today. And to give you an example of how they go together and how they travel from generation to generation, to talk more explicitly, I'm going to talk about my own race and class privilege. I thought it might be helpful for us to think about how I come to be in this privileged position of preaching here to you today. How does my race and class privilege bring me to this moment in time? So to reflect on that, I'm going to start a little over 50 years ago. I could go back a lot farther, but for today, we'll start here. In 1957, my parents were both 23 years old, and they bought their first house, where they would live for the next 30 years in San Diego. My dad was working as a cabinet maker, and his employer vouched for him and helped him secure the loan for the house construction. My parents were also able to obtain a second loan to buy the property they wanted. In 1957, anti-discrimination laws covering private housing were not in effect. It is unlikely that the loans my parents received would have been available to people of color. And even if they had been, those people would not have been able to buy and build in the neighborhood where my parents chose to live. The ability to own property and one's own home, of course, is considered a cornerstone of prosperity and wealth accumulation in the United States, part of the American dream. My parents' white privilege allowed them to own their own home very early in life, which contributed enormously to their financial stability. By 1970, my father was able to start his own construction company with financial support and mentorship from white colleagues and fellow businessmen. The construction industry in San Diego was defined by a network of white men who knew each other, advised each other, and generally worked in friendly competition. It remains to this day a hard industry in which to survive and thrive, and my father would not have been able to start his business or succeed without the support of that network. His white privilege certainly played a role in providing him with the support he needed to succeed. The company was very successful, and by the time I was growing up, my parents were wealthy. Unlike my older siblings, I attended a private school. I traveled with my parents. We went to the theater and the opera. My parents' white privilege had become class privilege. And I was the first in my family to attend college, a private college with an excellent reputation. My parents paid for my schooling, and I graduated college with no outstanding loans to pay. Their race and class privilege had now become my race and class privilege. It took me a few years, but I eventually ended up working at my parents' construction company. More race and class privilege handed down to the next generation. I was 29 years old when I bought my house, later than my parents, but still much earlier than many of my peers. The house my partner and I bought was built in 1929, and the original title includes this provision: that no part of said land shall ever or at any time be used or occupied by any person other than one of the white or Caucasian race, except such as are in the employ of the owner or tenants of said property in the capacity of servants. This provision would have been legal in California until 1963, when California's first attempt at a fair housing law was passed. That law was immediately challenged by property owners and landlords, and it wasn't until 1967 that the California courts upheld the constitutionality of it. So it is no wonder that the neighborhood remains primarily white. When I decided to attend seminary and to move to Northern California, I expected to take out student loans to pay my way, loans I fully expected to be available to me, but my parents offered to pay my tuition, which I gratefully accepted. Because of this, the continued benefits of race and class privilege, I have been able to attend school full-time, and I have not had to work for supplemental income. This means that I will be able to complete seminary in 3 years, rather than the 4 or 5 it takes many other students. You should also be aware there is minimal financial support available for those of us preparing for Unitarian Universalist ministry, which means those of us in seminary are already a very privileged group of people, overwhelmingly white, overwhelmingly middle and upper middle class. I am privileged among privileged. And this brings me to today, to the privilege of preaching to this congregation. I am your intern minister because I am able to accept an unpaid internship. I approached you and asked if I could come be your intern. Without this privilege, I would have had to wait another year to apply for paid internships again, a very competitive process. Or I would have had to live apart from my partner for a year in order to take a non-local paid internship. So this is how you come to have a wealthy, highly educated, heterosexual, able-bodied white woman preaching to you today. I'm going to remind you and me, the point of examining all this is not to feel guilty. I need to remind myself too, it's easy to feel guilty, to feel bad about the opportunities I've had. But guilt doesn't fight racism, and it doesn't fight the systems that perpetuate racism. I would actually suggest that guilt immobilizes us, keeps us at home feeling bad rather than out in the world. The point is not that I should have less. The point is that everyone should have equal access to education and employment and home ownership and even internships. And it's important, spiritually important for me to hold that I am not just lucky. My parents worked hard to be successful, definitely, but they're not just hard workers or smart people. We have privileges, and our lives have been shaped irrevocably by those privileges. For us as Unitarian Universalists, the point of all this is not to become people that we are not. There's a lot of writing and discussion in our denomination right now about the challenges of becoming more diverse in our congregational life. It is discouraging and disturbing that in spite of our principles and our commitments to social justice, values and traits that we know should be attractive to people from all backgrounds, that we remain a predominantly white, middle-class denomination. There are lots of theories about why this is and what we need to do to change it. But to me, our inability to attract a greater diversity of people indicates that as white people, we still have work to do. And I believe that learning about white privilege is a good place to start. It would actually be easier for me to imagine that my hard work and natural intelligence got me here. It would be easier. But spiritual growth is rarely about what's easy. I believe this is some of the most important spiritual work that white people can do. It does not serve us well to go through life wrapped in a cocoon of comfort that keeps us from seeing and knowing the world in which we live. This is part of the reason why Katie and I are offering a class in March called Examining Whiteness. The curriculum comes from the Unitarian Universalist Association. We will meet 6 times and examine different aspects of white identity. What does it mean to us to be white? What are the positive aspects of white identity? What is the history of white identity in American culture and in Unitarian Universalism? If you have even a smidge of curiosity about this topic, if you are incensed by this sermon and can't wait to talk to me about it, I hope you will take the class. And if you are unable to meet on Tuesdays when the class is scheduled, please talk to me anyway, and we can talk about developing a self-study. I am also preaching again next week a companion sermon to this one called Wrestling with History. As part of this work of learning about the world around us, I will share with you some stories of African American experiences in Unitarian Universalist history. And this, it will be one way for us to also honor Black History Month together. I believe that this is soul work. This is the work of getting out of our comfortable and secure vehicle to feel the cold rain on our skin and to risk the dangers of the flood around us. But here's what I need you to know. We are at risk whether we stay in the car or not. The flood is here and now. We can get out of the car and see things as they really are, or we can take our chances while the water sweeps us away. As with all sermons, this one is hopefully a starting point or a continuing point for your own self-reflection. What I'm calling on you to do today is to commit to taking one next step in your learning. Take the class, come to next week's sermon, maybe dig into your own personal history and reflect on how race and class privilege may have benefited you. Read a book about white privilege. Learn the history and experience of people of color here in Hayward. Do something. Just one thing. Get out of the car. May it be so. Blessed be.